Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and on a weekend of mostly canned broadcasts, because indeed it is a holiday weekend, and I want to wish our listeners a very Merry Christmas, and looking a little forward, Happy New Year. We are live. We're here in the studio. We're available to answer your questions. So we encourage you to call us. 888-302-3684 is our number, 888-302-3684. But if you're a little hungover or a little preoccupied with holiday activities, you can just sit back and relax and listen and learn. That's the idea behind Intelligent Medicine and behind our podcast, which you can find at drhoffman.com. And so we'll begin taking your phone calls momentarily, but we got lots of stories to cover this weekend. This hour or next, I'll talk a little bit about the movie Concussion. I saw it on opening day, on Christmas Day, because it's a medical movie. And it's a movie that I think has tremendous consequences for how we view competitive sports in America. And if you're a parent or a grandparent, maybe you're a kid in high school or in college playing competitive sports, this is a very, very important movie for you to see. I think every American should see the movie Concussion, and I'll tell you why in just a few moments. 888-302-3684 is our number. And the story that I'll start with has to do with a nutrient that we don't commonly associate with cancer protection. You know, we know that antioxidants, vitamins A, C, E, D, omega-3 fatty acids, phytonutrients like green tea, and indeed we'll talk a little bit about green tea and cancer prevention a little later in the program. These are nutrients that form a bulwark of protection against cancer, and many, many studies validate their effectiveness. But this is a nutrient that is associated, a very important nutrient, but is associated with cardiovascular benefits, anti-diabetes benefits. But here we go. Magnesium intake may be beneficial in preventing pancreatic cancer. One of the most dread forms of cancer, pancreatic cancer. This is a very, very serious problem. It's the fourth leading cause of cancer-related death in both men and women in the United States. And so an article appeared in the British Journal of Cancer, Magnesium Intake and the Incidence of Pancreatic Cancer. And what they found, to their surprise, is there was a very robust protective effect of magnesium against pancreatic cancer. And you might ask, why? How could that possibly be? Well, sometimes we find things and we say we don't understand why, but it is protective. But there may be a plausible reason for the protective effects of magnesium in pancreatic cancer, because it's thought that, well, pancreatic cancer in some ways is related to type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes puts more stress on the pancreas. The pancreas has to go into overdrive to produce more insulin because of insulin resistance, and you get fatter and fatter. You crave more and more carbohydrates. Your blood sugar at first is normal or near normal, and eventually it gets high, and then finally you have full-blown type 2 diabetes. And that situation, in addition to obesity, is very much associated with pancreatic cancer. Previous studies have found that magnesium is inversely associated with the risk of diabetes, which is a risk factor for pancreatic cancer. So they did a study. They analyzed an enormous treasure trove of data on over 60,000 men and women ages 50 to 76, looking at the potential association between magnesium and pancreatic cancer. And here's what they found. Obviously, not that many participants developed pancreatic cancer, but if you look at 66,000 men and women, there still were 151 of them who developed pancreatic cancer. And what they found was that for every 100 milligram per day decrease in magnesium intake, it was associated with a 24% increase in the occurrence of pancreatic cancer. So that is a pretty robust association. And what they found, encouragingly, was that it was not just about dietary magnesium, because we know that certain foods which may have anti-cancer benefits, such as dark leafy greens or nuts, they're high in magnesium. So you might just say, well, it's not the magnesium, it's eating all these healthy foods. Well, no. According to the study, the benefits were limited to those taking magnesium supplements, either from a multivitamin or an individual supplement. So very cool study on magnesium, why it really underlies the importance of taking additional supplemental magnesium on a daily basis. I take something called Jigsaw Magnesium along with my multi, which contains magnesium. Foundation formula has generous amounts of magnesium, but I supplement that with Jigsaw Magnesium every day. That's magnesium malate, a very bioavailable form of malate that doesn't cause diarrhea. All right, this one, you know, over the holidays, they have a lot of these old movies on TV, and I love watching TCM, Turner Classic Movies, which has some of these great movies, old movies from the 30s and 40s. And some of them, the musicals, are just fantastic. And I love watching Fred Astaire dance. It's just amazing to watch the fluidity, the fluency, the beauty of dance. And, you know, sometimes I wish I could be reincarnated as Fred Astaire with that uncanny ability to dance. I can't dance very well. I can dance sort of like 70s, 80s retro rock style. But when it comes to synchronized dancing, tap dancing, things like that, forget about it. New research finds dancing may burn more calories than cycling, running, or swimming. Well, those latter three are things that I do. I do triathlons, so in training for triathlons, I cycle on a bicycle, sometimes for hours at a time. I run, and in fact, I took a glorious run on Christmas Day because of the wonderful warm temperatures here in New York. It was great. Looked out the window, and it looked a little dark and gloomy, but on the thermometer, that belied the winter gloom, and it was about 60-something, I think 60, 61 degrees. So I put on my shorts and my T-shirt and took a great run by the East River. Cycling, running, or swimming actually burn less calories than dancing, according to a new study. Certain styles of dance can burn more calories per hour than cycling, running, or swimming, according to new research from the University of Brighton in the UK. Scientists from university teamed up with dancers to conduct the study, and they used vests with accelerometers. You know, these are devices that tell you how fast you're moving. And heart rate monitors that tracked energy expenditure. And what they found was that participants in contemporary street and swing dances, that would be Fred Astaire, burn more calories than they would have in a comparative time period running, swimming, or cycling. Pretty cool. So the researchers conclude dance not only appears to increase positive and reduce negative emotions, which are typical effects of exercise, we also found that dancing actually reduced feelings of fatigue too. People may be familiar with runner's high, and there appears to be a similar effect after dancing too. And there's also the health benefits of getting your heart rate up and burning off calories. Very cool. 888-302-3684 is our number. That's a good start. We invite your phone calls. We'd love to hear from you on this holiday weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.
As we age, it's important to keep moving, but it doesn't have to hurt. You know, sometimes pain is inevitable, but suffering can be optional. In addition to healthier eating habits and staying active, I've discovered a powerful new formula to help provide nutritional support for healthy inflammation response. Kyolic Curcumin from our friends at Kyolic. Kyolic Curcumin is a synergistic combination of the antioxidant properties of odorless organic aged garlic extract, along with a proprietary Mariva turmeric complex made from a unique blend of curcumin and phosphatidylcholine to help maximize absorption. I take Kyolic Curcumin every day to provide natural support for healthy inflammation response, joint and muscle health, cardiovascular benefit, colon and liver function, as well as other nutritional benefits. So take the first step with Kyolic Curcumin. The rest is easy.
Kyolic Curcumin is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere. For more information, visit kyolic.com.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you on a holiday. Really, we are here. We are live. And we're here and available to take your phone calls. 888-302-3684 is our number. Should you choose to exercise that option, or alternatively, if you don't want to call us today, you can email us your question. Email it to radioprogram, that's one word, radioprogram at AOL.com, and we will use your question as grist for the mill for our weekly Q&A with Layla podcast, which is among our most popular podcasts. On a weekly basis, we answer your questions, and you can find those podcasts at drhoffman.com. Make 2016 your year to access all the great free content at drhoffman.com. And to help you along with your selection of content, we've provided you with a couple of articles at year's end, the top 10 podcasts of 2015 from such illustrious celebrities in the field of natural medicine as Suzanne Summers, Dr. David Perlmutter, Dr. Stephen Sinatra, and so on. And also some of our top 10 articles we feature in the top 10 articles of 2010. Check it out at drhoffman.com. All right, one of the big stories of 2015 was the official resurrection of coffee as something healthy. You know, coffee has had a bad rap for a long time. It's been associated with hypertension. It's been associated with stomach ulcers, acid reflux, and the heart palpitation known as atrial fibrillation. But according to a lot of research lately, and that's kind of surprising, because I still think that for some individuals, coffee poses a problem. Coffee consumption has not been consistently associated with hypertension. And when you look at the studies, big studies, you don't actually see a correlation between coffee consumption and ulcers or GERD or heart arrhythmias. So what's up with that? Well, I think some of these big population studies where you look at tens of thousands of people, it may obscure a small minority who have serious problems with coffee. And there's also the phenomenon that people who don't do well with coffee stop drinking coffee. So it's very hard to study them. So when you look at the population of people who consume a lot of coffee, those are people who do okay with a lot of coffee. So it turns out that if you do okay with a lot of coffee, you keep consuming a lot of coffee. Hence, the studies show that consuming a lot of coffee is okay. It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. But in a very interesting article in Science News, which is a wonderful publication. Again, a lot of story ideas from Science News, October of 2015. They have a summary of the research underlying the benefits of coffee. And in some cases, they're linked to caffeine. Caffeine actually reduces liver fibrosis. Studies have looked at people who have hepatitis C, which tends to move towards liver fibrosis and then ultimately towards liver cirrhosis. Fibrosis means sort of a hardening of the liver. Caffeine has been shown to reduce liver fibrosis. It also may slow heart and liver damage. It may counter Parkinson's disease. It may counter dementia. And it may act as a mood lifter for depression because it boosts feel-good dopamine in the brain. So caffeine works for some people. For others, it doesn't. And I think the key to that is actually a test that I'm now doing in the office on patients, which is a genetic test that shows whether you're a slow or fast metabolizer of caffeine. If you're a fast metabolizer of caffeine, you can hold your own. But if you're a slow metabolizer for caffeine, it builds up, and you may get caffeine hypersensitivity, sleep problems, anxiety, heart palpitations. These are some of the things that people who are sensitive to caffeine report, and certainly anxiety. Anxiety certainly can be worsened by excess caffeine, that's for sure. But if you are a fast metabolizer, you, in effect, you metabolize and break down the caffeine very readily, so you can consume a lot. Also, caffeine contains beneficial polyphenols in a category that's related to resveratrol from red wine and the cocoa flavanols that you get from chocolate. These polyphenols reduce liver fibrosis and boost DNA repair. They may fend off blood clots. They may boost metabolic efficiency. That's pretty cool because that may help dieters or people with insulin resistance. It may also suggest why coffee consumers may be at slightly lower risk of diabetes. Polyphenols may actually lower blood pressure. Instead of coffee raising blood pressure, polyphenols may relax the blood vessel endothelium, the lining of the blood vessels that may be associated with blood pressure control. Polyphenols may also lessen intestinal damage from free radicals. And then there are other compounds, less well-known, called diterpenes, like cafestol and cowiol. You probably never heard of these things. They fight carcinogens. They reduce liver DNA damage. They're anti-inflammatory. And they can also act as anti-cancer agents. They actually kill mesothelioma cells in lung tissues. And finally, a substance called trigonelline, which is a powerful antioxidant that lowers blood sugar and may have brain benefits. So coffee has been resurrected. And if you don't like coffee, do as I do. Get decaffeinated coffee because, well, you won't get the caffeine effects. You won't feel jangled, and you'll get a lot of the other health benefits because those dark pigments in coffee deliver many of the associated health benefits with coffee. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 888-302-3684. You can call us if you want this hour or next. This is Intelligent Medicine. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. While we're on the subject of beverages, let's talk about green tea. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I'm not a big fan of green tea. I got to say that I mostly guzzle decaf. I literally guzzle it. And part of the problem with decaf is that it is sometimes decaffeinated with harsh chemicals like methylene chloride. So what I go for, it's a little more expensive, it's very premium, is organic water-processed decaffeinated coffee. When it comes to green tea, I really don't care for the flavor. You know, maybe an occasional cup of green tea, but I can't nearly consume as much actual green tea as I need to get the health benefits. So I consume EGCG Ultra. I take one capsule twice daily. It's a product that you can find at drhoffman.com. It's a concentrate of something called epigallocatechin gallate. It's EGCG, not ECGCG. A lot of people confuse that with CBGB, the old rock palace, the grunge punk venue in lower Manhattan. No, CBGB's is defunct, but EGCG or EGCG, is still alive and well. New studies on green tea emphasize their anti-cancer benefits. Actually, there are 6,000 scientific publications on the topic of green tea alone, and there are 1,300 articles referencing both EGCG and cancer. In the April 2015 issue of the journal Prostate, which obviously has to do with the prostate and prostate cancer, very interesting article on the effects of brewed green tea compared with brewed black tea or just plain water on certain blood markers associated with prostate cancer developments and progression. This is from an article by Dr. Ralph Moss, who's been one of my favorite guests on Intelligent Medicine podcast for years. He writes a column in the Townsend Letter entitled The War on Cancer. And in this article, he talks about this study in the journal Prostate. 113 men who had been diagnosed with prostate cancer were randomized to consume 6 cups daily of brewed green tea or brewed black tea or just water. And then they had their prostate surgery. They had their prostates taken out. So, well, you know, while it didn't prevent them from having to have their prostates taken out, the patients who consumed green tea but not black tea or just water had a significant decrease in the amount of something called NF-kappa B, which is a very important marker that's associated with the aggressiveness of cancer and cancer risk. And, okay, well, fine, you know, one chemical is lowered. But what does that, does that really translate to results? Only green tea led to a statistically significant decrease in the serum PSA level after surgery. So that's pretty cool. And so there's a lot of buzz around green tea and prostate cancer. After all, the way that green tea was discovered as an anti-cancer agent is parts of China where they have a lot of esophageal cancer. And they have it's a big problem in China because they, contrary to what you may think, you know, the food is really healthy in China. Actually, a lot of the food is preserved with harmful chemicals. There's a lot of smokers in China, and now they drink a lot of alcohol. And that's a deadly combination when it comes to esophageal cancer that literally corrodes the esophagus and promotes the development of cancerous cells. And there's a lot of death due to esophageal cancer in China. So what they found is that in parts of China and among individuals who consumed a lot of green tea, it dramatically lowered the high risk of esophageal cancer. That was the original research. And now it's applicable to prostate cancer, and that's very exciting. All right. This item has to do with a controversial proposition. Women sometimes get depressed during pregnancy, and that is very bad, because depression itself may have negative effects on the fetus, on the developing brain of the fetus, because all those negative neurotransmitters, stress hormones, and so on, may have a negative effect. Plus, when you're pregnant and you're very depressed, it puts you at a much higher risk of what's termed postpartum depression. And that is a big risk factor for childhood health. It's not just bad for the mother, it's bad for the child. The bonding between mother and child is impaired. And that critical period where proper behavioral guidance and imprinting and proper breastfeeding and all that good stuff that happens in the first few months of infancy sometimes doesn't take place. So depression, big deal. And in the past, I've always questioned the notion of giving women who are pregnant antidepressants. But many studies have said, no problem, no problem, no problem. And so many women who have been pregnant have taken antidepressants. They figure, hey, what's worse, being super depressed or taking the slight risk, minimal risk of taking an antidepressant, something like Paxil, Zoloft, Lexapro, you name it, during pregnancy. And some of the studies have actually vindicated the antidepressants. They've said there's not been a big difference in the developmental status of children a year or two after a mother takes antidepressants during pregnancy. So they kind of gave it a green light. But here's a startling study just came out this month. Taking antidepressants during pregnancy increases the risk of autism by a whopping 87%. That's 87. Using antidepressants during pregnancy greatly increases the risk of autism, according to Professor Annick Berard of the University of Montreal. Professor Berard, an internationally renowned expert in the fields of pharmaceutical safety during pregnancy, came to her conclusions after reviewing data covering, get this, 145,000 pregnancies. So, not good. Taking antidepressants during the second or third trimester of pregnancy almost doubles the risk that the child will be diagnosed with autism by age 7, especially if the mother takes popular SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. I mentioned several before, Paxil, Zoloft, Prozac, Lexapro. These are the ones that cause problems. Effexor probably would be there too. These findings were published in JAMA Pediatrics, Journal of the American Medical Association. So what are they saying here? Is it the antidepressants per se? Well, it could be that the very same women who are prone to depression might be at slightly higher risk of having an autistic child. The same biochemistry that causes a mother to have depression might increase a child's risk for another type of brain disorder, which is autism. But it's also biologically plausible that whatever it is that SSRIs do to help the mom's brain may harm the developing fetus's brain and create stresses or changes that predispose that child to developing autism later on. So, you know, we got to talk about natural approaches to mood relief during pregnancy, safe things to take. One of my favorites is inositol, very safe to take during pregnancy. You can take literally teaspoons of inositol during pregnancy without a problem. Inositol has mild anti-anxiety, antidepressant effects. One of my favorite things to use. I probably wouldn't suggest that you take something stronger like St. John's wort. St. John's wort, excellent, perhaps if you're not pregnant, but I would discourage its use during pregnancy. Things like theanine may be safe and helpful, lemon balm for anxiety, magnesium. These are things that may be beneficial. Also, the omega-3 fatty acids, great for pregnancy and also helpful for mood. Knock yourself out with omega-3 fatty acids, EPA and DHA, because they'll help the baby, make the baby smarter, but also may help elevate mom's moods and even forestall postpartum depression. So these are, and by the way, very important to carefully assess a pregnant woman's thyroid status, because it's known that low thyroid can cause mood problems, but it's also known that low thyroid in a pregnant mom can cause intellectual deficits in a child, not necessarily autism, but the term cretin. You know, it's now used as a term of disparagement, you know, cretin, moron, imbecile. Cretin is a medical term that is applied to children who are born of hypothyroid mothers. They are often are intellectually impaired because of the effects on the brain development of the fetus of maternal hypothyroidism. So very, very important to check and tune up thyroid during pregnancy. The demands for thyroid increase dramatically during pregnancy. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is our number. We got lots more coming up on this weekend edition, this special holiday edition of Intelligent Medicine.
Got glutathione? Probably not as much as you once had. As we age, our glutathione levels drop dramatically, and that is a very big deal. Why? Because glutathione is your body's master antioxidant. It is unique in its ability to repair and rebuild cellular damage caused by free radicals, exposure to environmental toxins, and the aging process. The less glutathione in your body, the more vulnerable you are to health issues. Backed by 20 years of published research, RegActive contains ME3, a patented probiotic proven to naturally stimulate the body's own production of glutathione. RegActive is brought to you by Essential Formulas, renowned for introducing award-winning Dr. O'Hara's probiotics 15 years ago, and meets the criteria of the same high standards and trusted time-proven results. Revolutionary. Remarkable. RegActive. Look for RegActive at Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide where Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are sold.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And this item has to do with mercury. You know, we know that mercury is toxic, and particularly mercury in fish is thought to be something that we should be avoiding. Fish like tuna, fish like tilefish, shark, these are among the species that have high levels of what's called organic mercury compounds. It even gets confusing for me. Imagine your confusion when we get into this chemistry about mercury. So there are two types of mercury. There's what's called organic mercury, which is sometimes referred to as methyl mercury in fish. That is thought to be the real dangerous form of mercury. And so I think there's pretty much consensus now that, for example, pregnant women should not consume a lot of tuna. They should not consume a lot of the fish that contain high levels of organic mercury, which is methyl mercury. But what I'm getting to is that an argument has been made that while there's mercury in fillings, we know this because you mix mercury with silver and you get something called an amalgam. An amalgam in metallurgy is two different metals put together, and then you get the qualities of one along with the qualities of another. You get the hardness of silver along with the flexibility of mercury, and that's just an ideal material for filling teeth. The problem is that some of that mercury leaks into your system, and it's a particularly dangerous part of your body. It's in your mouth, which is close to your brain, and also close to your digestive tract. But many of the folks who say fillings are not a problem say, look, there's a big distinction between organic and inorganic mercury. The organic kind in fish, yeah, that's dangerous, but the stuff in your fillings, it's inorganic, not a problem. Well, that is until this month. A study came out from the University of Georgia. Research has found that inorganic mercury, which is previously thought to be a less harmful form of the toxic metal, is actually very damaging to key cell processes. This is the first study to compare the effects of inorganic and organic mercury at a biochemical, physiological, and proteomic level. Proteomics is the study of how proteins function in the body. And the research performed by Stephen Lavoie, he's a microbiology doctoral student, and it was published in December in the Journal of Biological Inorganic Chemistry. So you're not going to see this in mainstream media. But the research looked at how inorganic and organic mercury affected specific molecular processes, and the news was not good. So where do you get the inorganic mercury? Well, according to the study co-author, Dr. Ann Summers, she says, today most human exposure to inorganic mercury is from dental fillings, while organic mercury comes from methyl mercury in fish. But we shouldn't disregard the inorganic mercury that we get from our fillings. Organic mercury exposure is associated with neurological diseases, but inorganic mercury, the stuff you get from fillings, is known to cause neurological, kidney, and autoimmune diseases. Wow. That is pretty earth-shattering. According to Dr. Summers, it's important to know that inorganic mercury is more potent than organic mercury in disrupting protein iron centers such as those we have in our own cells. So, you know, instead of saying, nothing to worry about here, folks, let's just move along, nothing to see here, we need to continue research like that. It's taken, you know, mercury fillings, they've been in existence for how long? At least half a century or more. And only now is the research catching up and revealing that this may be a serious problem. This may indeed be a serious problem for humans. And many countries have taken steps to ban mercury fillings, particularly in Scandinavia. They've taken the lead. And maybe, just maybe, we ought to be taking a harder look at our sources of inorganic mercury, as well as the, you know, the organic mercury that we get from fish. Vaccines, that's a whole other story. Mercury continues to be used as a preservative in vaccines to our detriment. Okay, so this item comes to us from researchers who have looked at the effectiveness of berberine for lowering hemoglobin A1C. Hemoglobin A1C, as you know, is a measurement of your blood sugar over time. And diabetes is associated with a high hemoglobin A1C. If you've got a hemoglobin A1C of 5.8 to 6.2, that's borderline. If you've got it above 6.2, that's generally acknowledged to be type 2 diabetes. So researchers looked at the effects of berberine versus metformin in one study. And they found that berberine worked as well as metformin in lowering blood sugar. Berberine is included in a product called CMCore, which I use frequently for treating patients with metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, prediabetes. In this new study, they determined that berberine was effective in lowering hemoglobin A1C levels. So the percentage of change was dramatic in some patients, going from 7.7 to 7 in one patient, going from 7.6 to 7.1 in another, going from 7.8 to 6.6 in another patient, significant lowering of hemoglobin A1C without diet modification. Hey, when you add diet modification to exercise, it's often easy to normalize hemoglobin A1C. We do it all the time at the Hoffman Center. All right, you know, as you form your New Year's resolutions, it's likely you may do a resolution around food. But be careful, because your spouse, your significant other, has to be in alignment with you. Here's a study that illustrates what happens when your partner is not in alignment with you. Headline, British bully jailed for attacking girlfriend after she asked if he wanted McDonald's while on a diet. This is from our good old tabloid here in New York, the New York Daily News, known for lurid headlines. The man watching his weight flew into rage when his girlfriend asked him if he wanted a McDonald's McMuffin. This British man, Lee Barton, threatened to kill Ashley Irvine as he believed she was taunting him for being overweight. She merely asked him if he wanted a McDonald's McMuffin, but unbeknownst to her, or perhaps even beknownst to her, he was on a diet, and she was taunting him. This individual also, according to the description, weighed 400 pounds, and now he's been jailed for more than 2 years following a brutal assault in Perth, Scotland. Irvine offered Barton a snack on February 21st when he suddenly flew into a rage. In response, he started to argue with her, accusing her of starting on him and winding him up because he was on a diet. So be careful when you offer a tempting snack to someone on a diet. They may just go off on you. All right, 888-302-3684 is our number. We're here live on a holiday weekend. And, we're also live on WOR, our flagship station in New York. So we anticipate some phone calls. Plus, we've got some interesting stories coming up next hour. We're going to talk about a Christmas gift for those who are in favor of GMO labeling. And we'll also provide you with a review of the new movie just out, Christmas Day, Concussion. It's going to change the way that America looks at football. A very, very important milestone.